Lab Tech Unplugged, unearthing topics in the life sciences.
Hi everybody and welcome back to Lab Tech Unplugged. I'm your host Rachel and in today's episode of our Spotlight on Sustainable Science series, I'm talking with Robin Tan and Leo Chow from Zenpak, a company who've been testing the versatility limits of paper and cardboard to design and develop custom, eco-friendly packaging for a whole range of industries, including the life sciences. In today's instalment, we'll be exploring the balance between creative design and sustainability and how the company has been innovating to meet environmental legislation and certifications. So Leo is Zenpak's co-founder and creative director who ensures that the company remains a leading innovator in the industry. He has a wealth of experience across product design, packing and brand strategy with a host of well-known brands, including Apple, Google and Nike, to name a few. He uses this experience to oversee the entire design process at Zenpak and provide ongoing project leadership, coordination and mentoring so that their clients' ideas become reality. So hello, Leo, and thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having us here.
And we're also joined by Zenpak's managing partner, Robin, who ensures that the company continues to provide both innovative services and solutions along with operational excellence. He has over 20 years experience in business development, working with startups and Fortune 500 companies to find creative, long-standing solutions to challenging problems. Thank you, Robin, for joining us, and hello.
Hello, Rachel, and thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. So to begin with, I wonder if you could both just tell us a little bit more about your backgrounds and when you first became interested in sustainability.
I will maybe start first on this one. So I used to be in the biotech and pharmaceutical industry. I was helping these companies to be more efficient in their automation production process. And that's really when I first learned how much plastic is used in that industry in the first view. And later, when I co-founded Zenpak, and this is when I realized, okay, how much that we could possibly do on working with companies like this and working with my co-founder, Leo, to come up with different solutions on utilizing what we know best, which is paper, potentially replacing different type of plastic usage that's happening in the biotech and then pharmaceutical space. And that's really combining the know-how and knowledge from what I learned from Leo is where I started to have different ideas on how we are able to pursue in that direction.
Yeah. Thank you, Robin. Yeah, what about you, Leo?
So I started years back when I was studying at Emily Carr University in Vancouver, majoring in industrial design. And part of the curriculum, I think at the time, were heavily influenced by these principles around building products with a cautions of mind around how do we not create a lot of negative impact on the environment. So, you know, I still remember our professors, Louis Saint-Pierre and Christian Blight, you know, talked to us about, you know, designing, obviously, you know, form over function was a lot of like a little tagline or head around these, but also, you know, a lot of principles around how do we really do design work with that in mind. And really, there's two books that was driving a lot of the principles. One is called Natural Capitalism by Paul Hawken. The other one's Cradle by Cradle. Now it's kind of like a standard textbook now for circular design. So these principles, you know, I think it's how I started really understanding why and also the methods around sustainability. With Zenpak, these, I think what I learned before from the product side naturally flows into what we do at Zenpak. This is kind of a bit of background story how I got personally involved in the topic.
Thank you. And you've both touched upon the kind of the founding of Zenpack. So I just wondered if you could maybe give us a bit more information about how the company came to be or around your initial vision with sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely. The company was founded by one of my really good friend who was in this paper mill company in Taiwan. They are a large multi-billion dollar paper mill public company, and that's really how we decided when they were at this company, they decided to spin out and kind of do their own thing, and this is how Zenpack started it. And in the very beginning, our vision and goal is to connect design with mass production. And that's a very difficult task from design and then bridging how everything will turn into an actual reality, which is executing it into the mass production view. And from the very beginning, we fo really focus on the paper material, and that's really what our factory is focusing on. So our initial vision is very simple, is to how to continue to reduce waste, utilizing our design capability. And on top of that, we are responsible for millions of a packaging that we produce every year. So this is something where we care very much on how do we educate our client and continue to learn from our factory capability, making sure the product that we are producing is meeting this current trend and is meeting the current sustainability goal out there.
Yeah. Honestly, I think because of that gap, and we're trying to fill that gap, we feel there's a massive responsibility on our side that when I used to be working with just a design agency, that we don't really see the mass production side or enhance, feel like we can contribute or change things. On the vice versa, on the supplier side, when they're not in touch with the client that closely as the design agencies, they generally just follows whatever that's given to them. Whereas when Zenpack handles both this responsibility and then this connections, I think giving us the not just obviously the opportunity, but really that feeling that we need to do something about this. So I just want to add that to it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so, yeah, it seems like you, well, from my understanding, then Zenpack, you really take the comprehensive overview and management of things right from kind of design to delivery. And so, with that, I guess just what are some of the key challenges then that you're innovating and working towards solving around packaging?
Yeah, so overall, I think as an overarching theme, I'll say around sustainability, at least, that, the years when I joined, this was about 10, 12 years ago, joined the company. I'll say even up till today, packaging do get a bit of the bad rap about that it's kind of wasteful. We've heard about this term about over-packaging or, overuse. I think the overarching thing on our side is that we look at packaging, and when we design or produce them, we think about how do we eliminate basically waste from everything we do. And this is really closely to this, I think, circular design and circular thinking around these, that honestly, the instant you get your, product, the packaging gets tossed away. They're end of Basically, that's the end of their life, right? We try to change that, I think, dynamic and see there's opportunities. Obviously, very likely these still gets tossed away, but if that's the case, how do we make sure it gets recycled or even upcycled? I'll say that's an overarching challenge for any, I'll say, packaging professionals. Under that umbrella, though, I think there are a few things where not so sexy ones, but it's very, very much what we care about. So we give this example a lot where the worst, I would say, scenario for a not sustainable solution on packaging is your product arrived broken. So it doesn't really matter how sustainable material is, but if your product arrived broken, everything basically now is a waste. And all the energy, right, you're putting into it now is gone. So we take that quite seriously in terms of if you're going to build something, make it useful, right? So if you want to build a packaging, make sure it does its job. And the first thing is you need to protect your product first. And to do that appropriately with questions, with all the science, with all the methods in mind, obviously we need to do that. But first of all, we need to think about why is it there in the first place. I also sometimes give this example, like, do we really need a packaging for hammer? Do I need a protective hammer? Well, in most cases, you don't. But if you're sending this gift to your, uncle to have worked in wood industry for, 12 years, or sorry, 50 years, say, that retirement gift probably, deserves some wrapping. And for us, I think that's okay. Like, you got to look at the scenario and the instances and why you're doing this and make sure to respond to that. So inherently, these key issues are around, I'll say, protections and the methods of design. And I think right now what's trendy is material, that a lot of the key challenges are around material. And if everyone's sort of looking and wishing there's like a magic material that will solve everything, it seems like that's not going to happen anytime soon. And usually requires a lot of development and sometimes a lot of capital to be there, which leads to the final sort of points that we, again, usually talk about is while we're developing and waiting for, and there's plenty of people who's trying to develop a new material that could solve a lot of problems. In the meantime, I think what's important is that we communicate and educate each other. So amongst clients and suppliers, that we need to collaborate and actually give each other the right information. So that's kind of some points that we usually talk about when we talk about the challenges that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think, that was really interesting to kind of think back to the question of why is packaging there in the first place and its importance. And in that case, it does reduce waste just simply by protecting the products. Robin, do you have anything to add to Leo's points at all?
No, that's it. Exactly on point. No, I thought that was a great response. Thank you, Leo. Actually, there is one point I want to add is Google have recently released a study. And this is a study I think anyone can have access to. It's very interesting. They spent many, many years on figuring out the better way to design their packaging. And they have come up with a sustainability research paper where they share with the entire public in the world globally. So I want to commend them for sharing that document. And whoever is really interested about that document, I'm sure they can Google it and find it. Or they are more than welcome to reach out to us and we can share that paperwork with them. And that's exactly some of the point they talk about in there is what Leo just mentioned there. So I thought that's a great resource for peers, for all the packaging company out there to utilize.
Thank you. And if any listeners are interested and are struggling to find it, then please reach out to us or either Leo or Robin, I'm sure, on LinkedIn, and we can, make sure you get that link. So with Zenpak, paper and cardboard are very much at the core of what you do. So firstly, why is this? Why did you make this decision? And what benefits did these particular materials have over others, say, plastic? And then I guess on the other side of the coin, what are some of the key challenges in working with paper and cardboard that you found?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. many, I think during our entire sort of practice of our profession, there has been challenges coming from different angles. Mostly, I think generalize them, basically saying that, hey, this plastic solution actually has a lower carbon impact compared with this paper one. Where in some instances, I'll agree. If you're purely looking at carbon footprint wise, there are most likely some solutions in plastic that's lower in carbon footprint. Now, the angle or the mindset that we want to promote or explain is that I think given the current climate change and all that stuff happening, we can't really look at just the carbon numbers anymore. It's quite apparent that you can see literally the plastic, particles now in every part of our world, and it's causing trouble, mostly our health, and then the health of our soil, sea ecosystem, and including us, obviously. And then that, so usually I tell them, well, if you look at just carbon alone, you're right. But if you look at your world, it's not actually hard to see why we want to eliminate those polymer-based material, especially to be used in plastic where we know it's not gonna, the life cycle is quite short. So that's really, I think, part of the challenge that we have to explain sometimes to different clients and, in the more methodology way, like, this is the report and this is the study. And we're glad that we have, some partners on our side to help us to explain some of these things, and then that, I think the movement is quite readily visible now. On the paper side alone, though, there are challenges, obviously. Plastic, while harmful in many ways, is a amazing material. That's why we've been using it for so long and so vastly, right? I think one of the biggest thing is about moisture. So, we've worked with paper long enough to understand that it can really achieve a lot of different things, sometimes even better than plastic parts. But inherently, it's a fiber-based material and it absorbs water without, any kind of coating or anything like that. So when a project requires a barrier of water or moisture, paper can be tricky and could have its own challenges. There are many solutions out there. There are people developing compostable film, compostable coating to achieve that. There's different wax from, used from our ancient time even, all the way today. So there's solutions around these, but generally speaking, that's at least where I see the most challenges when we're trying to replace basically paper with a lot of different things. I don't know, Robin, if you have something to add. I know there's many cases that we have,
Nope,
talked before.
you've done a great job. Thank you.
So then, I guess sticking with the topic of materials, you've said as much as we would have liked, there is no magic material to solve everything, unfortunately. But can you talk us through any of the key discoveries or biggest innovations in the field of materials that have led us to develop more eco-friendly manufacturing and packaging?
While there are a lot of advanced things going on, away from like seaweed-based things, any seashell-based things, foam-wise, there's a lot of that going on. Mushroom-based, a lot of those going on right now and pushing forward. What we see in the recent years, what I'm really happy to see, is material called molded pulp, which at this point is quite readily available now. But it truly, I think, over the years, we watched this material gets advanced and developed into a true replacement of, I'll say, a molded plastic part, which been years we have not been able to replace that. Molded pulp is a, imagine like, you take a blender or something, you blend like, bamboo fibers, sugarcane fibers, and some wood. And you mush them into this consistency, and then you heat them up or air dry them to and place in the mold, and then this give you a sort of a molded shape. Again, while nothing too exciting about this at this point, it has truly matured, I think, to become a real solution. We've seen Apple, over the years changing their plastic tray to this material. We've seen, all the electronic, in our Bay Area have basically adopted this. We've seen home electronics, fridge, this big appliances now utilizing these material. I like that. I like the material that's not yelling and like trying to get a lot of your attention, but truly just doing its job. One thing about Molded Pulp is it does use quite a bit of water. So I know that manufacturers are using recycling, methods to reduce that as well. So that's, yeah, it's like a material in mind.
Yeah, no, thank you. How about you, Robin? Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I want to support that document a little bit based on what Leo just said. The molded fiber is these egg shell cartons that you see in the supermarket. That's one of the examples. It used to be plastic or plastic wrapped, and now I see many, many companies have adapted to it. That's just a small sort of example. Picture a 90-pound fridge that used to be used in styrofoams, which cannot be recycled. It goes straight to the landfill. Picture all these styrofoams get replaced by molded fibers in combination with heavy-duty cardboard to protect them during transportation. I only give two examples, but just there are millions of examples out there that has been adapting this technology. And you will see it. Anybody will see this technology around them. And this is something where we continue to educate our client where, hey, your product can look premium, can feel premium, but at the same time, we can design it to be very sustainable and protect the environment. So I wanted to add to that note for the molded fiber part.
Yeah, I think the point you've made there is really important that it's, as you said, packaging does have a core purpose and it needs to be able to fulfill that whilst being sustainable is the balance. So I guess then kind of thinking about your own internal processes, how do you then integrate sustainability, say, into the design process so that you aren't compromising on this functionality or on aesthetics for, when companies need branded packaging?
Yeah. And it actually goes back to a little bit what we have shared on like our principles around building this. The first thing is, honestly, sometimes we challenge the project by saying if we actually do need a packaging. So the most sustainable thing probably is not to have one, is not have a part here. Eliminate it, right? So it kind of goes back to that, and I think that's why the conversation afterwards with the clients, even internally, gets a little easier when we have that kind of mindset. Some of the balancing around these, honestly, at this point of our market, it's actually not that difficult. I believe that we have collectively, I think designers and suppliers have now, I think, pushed, and also the consumer, right, have pushed this sort of what is luxury and what is premium towards to a look that can be also be quite sustainable. So I think that gap has been merging and getting closer. So at that end, I think I'm happy because I think over the years, again, we've worked towards that. Some of the, I think, more challenging ones are, say, functionally, this absolutely needs to have a water sort of, resistant or waterproof barrier of some sort. In that case, it's really hard to not use certain material, including, plastic. I would say that's the balance we need to find, is that when the requirement does come along with that, how do you define it and keep that as minimal as possible? Again, if the product arrived failed, it doesn't work, right? So
Yeah.
I think the true balance is finding that. So really define the scope of work while requirements really help to eliminate or reduce the use of these material. That's not ideal.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Thank you. I guess taking a slightly different turn, I feel like there's a lot of different terms that are thrown around when people are talking about how products are processed or disposed of. I mean, you know, things are labeled as recyclable, biodegradable, compostable, and a couple have been mentioned already in this conversation. So just from your experience, your extensive experience of working in this field, can you just give a breakdown of the differences between each of these, the environmental impact that products of each of this kind have, and I guess if there's any applications where these are the most suitable or the kind of the properties to aim for.
Yeah, the three things that gets most sort of thrown around a lot are obviously recyclable, biodegradable, compostable. And we've seen them used entirely wrong in many cases. And I don't blame them sometimes, but you know, I think brands now, business owners need to be extremely careful about this, that sometimes it's policy and, you know, law regulations required to label them clearly and accurately. So recycled, I think we all understand it as kind of we've done it for many years. Unfortunately, that we also have learned again over the years that depending on where you're at, your recycle bin might not be ended up where in locations where it even gets recycled. So honestly, over the years, corporates and many others have pushed for this, but the results aren't great, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we're looking at, you know, I think policymakers are looking at basically putting a tap, meaning on suppliers, meaning that, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what recycle percentage you are anymore, you can only allow to produce this amount of plastic per year, right?
Yeah.
I think that for me is probably more of a suitable solution for now. Whereas biodegradable and compostable is where things gets really messy because people use them interchangeably and not knowing what's the difference. So very simple example, your water bottle is biodegradable just over, you know, some hundred thousand years. It will biodegrade. It is biodegrading as we speak. It just take a lot longer. So naturally everything biodegrade, maybe not some metal, but you know, a lot of things around us naturally biodegrade. Where compostable is entirely different, I'll say, category. It is part of biodegrade, or you know, the whole realm. But to be compostable, it means that this material needs to decompose over a certain of time and back to nature, basically soil, in a specific time frame. Okay, it's not just, you know, however 100 years that it might happen. Compostable, I'll say, is right now the, you know, what we like to hit or explain, is that there are various of organizations that can certify, mostly TÜV certifications you can get. And there's two types, which I want to make sure that we are very clear about. One is called industrial compostable, and the other one is home compostable. Industrial compostable just means that, you know, it needs to be in usually a industrial facility that have an extreme control over time, temperature, humidity, and conditions. In that condition, the product and the material will be able to compost, right? Whereas home compostable really means this material can just be thrown in your compost bin or, you know, just in the ground, dirt, and it will decompose. Quick, you know, things, and we also have a blog written about this. I don't think I can explain it to the full detail compared to that. So maybe we'll throw that link in there sometime. People who are interested can also dig through that a little bit more.
Lovely. We will make sure to share that out.
Yeah.
Robin, do you have anything at all that you would like to throw in?
No, this one is very complicated discussion. And then this is also related to greenwashing, which is why Leo talked about it initially. Brand owners, business owners has to be very careful on the term they throw out today. And one of the biggest reason is people, public are very educated now, in terms of these different terms is being used. We are learning every day on how these things goes ourselves. We can't really call ourselves an experts. I can only say we are known users. And then we are continuing to learn about these terms on the daily basis, so we can continue to educate people that's around us and then our clients.
No, definitely. And I think, as you mentioned, they're greenwashing, and just because these words also are being thrown around or being used, it's making sure they're being used properly. I just have remember an image of, and I can't remember exactly where I was, but there was a bin where there was one end was, general waste, and one end was recyclable, and they both went into the exact same bag. So
Yeah.
did absolutely no benefit. So as Zenpack, as a company who provides services all around the world, just thinking about how you work to meet the different environmental that you the different environmental legislation that you get across different specific regions, and then also in your eyes, what impact do you think that these legislations have had? Has it been, have we seen the net positive from them?
In general, I'll say that in order to follow, you have to know them first. And I think companies even struggle to understand or follow up or following, the ever progressing legislations around the world in different regions. We rely quite a bit on our partners, like I mentioned before, and these specific two organizations that we have in partner with right now. One is called Plastic Free, and another one is called Positive Luxury, which I believe both actually based in UK and have a ground there. And we're happy to meet them and be part of their organizations as well. Definitely look them up if you're interested. But in general, I think what I'll say is that, different regions where we're at in California, in 2022 had passed a law called SB 54, I believe. And then it listed a long list of regulations around how plastic is limited and what kind of recycled content needs to be. And also UK Plastic Treaty was a big one as well, I believe around the same time. Also, basically mandate the same things, eliminating plastic use from a lot of categories and recycled content regulated in many categories as well. I can only see more of these coming. I don't see a momentum stopping anytime. What I think for business though is that it's probably time to go beyond that. That a lot of these regulations seem to be quite stringent when they first were talked about, but 6 months pass and then things look like it's too little. So, a lot of times when a client comes into us and say, "Hey, our thing is being hit, we need to change our packaging because of this new law," what we suggest is that instead of just, okay, let's use something with less or more recycled content altogether, you should probably think about removing that altogether, because in the next 6 months there might be new things coming in different regions, and a global brand's, to managing risk at that level, you probably want to go a step further. So honestly, in our business it's helping because we do get a lot of inquiries about these, but I can tell, our clients that it's definitely a risk on their side, and it's honestly pretty difficult to be like, following every single new laws that's coming up. So again, it might be your benefit to just move a little faster, actually beyond and ahead of some of these laws to
Yeah, stay ahead of the curve.
prevent, right, be ahead of the curve. We're working with the partners right now, Fastic3 and other, to sort of look at what's the next, really, the policy that we should be having. And again, there are a lot of news and a lot of sort of new regulations that I think likely to be coming in. But I think all to us there are more even, I think, dedicated or, stringent policies around these. So yeah, these are coming.
Just to chime in on that, I think on the production side plays a huge role on these working with this legislation. And then one of the questions you asked, Rachel, is we are shipping product globally to different regions. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge contrast between Europe, EU, and North America channel in terms of legislation. So we are battling on that issue every day with our clients. And so I think one thing I wanted to just give a tip to the companies out there who also have similar challenges where they're dealing their product globally is to challenge their design team, challenge their partner's design team to think about how to proactively overcome something where they can use globally. It's not an easy task. We get it all the time, but we have overcome many of these challenges in the past.
Yeah, no, it certainly doesn't seem like an easy task at all. So something that I know that something that you implement in your processes is the Forest Stewardship Council, or the FSC that it's abbreviated to. So I wondered if you could just give a bit more detail about what FSC certified products are, what does that mean, how you've implemented this, and then why certifications like FSC are so important for the industry and for consumers of products.
Yeah, so I can maybe chime in on this question first. FSC is really an organization that is making the entire chain of paper responsible. What that means is, I think many of the listeners might be from the biotech and pharmaceutical industry. So I'm going to use traceability as a word that people understand in this industry for the FSC. Picture the traceability responsibility for a single tree all the way to turn that into a pulp and into a paper. It's all traceable, and you will know exactly where this tree was from. When this paper was made, where this tree was from. As soon as this tree gets harvested, FSC also has a responsibility to plant more trees. That's really a big principle and foundation of what FSC is for. It's about that traceability from the harvesting to making into pulp, making into paper, getting into the distribution, and then distribution gets to the paper or box makers, and then it gets to the consumer. So that entire process is documented, and then whoever, which company that's being certified, they have to provide these documents as a part of a traceability process. Mm-hmm. So that's, in a nutshell, what FSC is really about. So when you purchase a product, it doesn't matter where you are located. If you look on the box, some of the boxes have this FSC logo, some of them don't. And these logos can only be used if the entire chain process has been certified. Mm-hmm. So looking into that, where they are making the maker of the product, the maker of the box, responsible for that process. So that is something where, again, we hold very dearly. We want to educate and letting our client know what they are and what type of impact this bring to the paper industry. So Yeah, I hope that answers some of the questions there, Rachel.
Absolutely, it does. Thank you. Leo, do you have anything to add at all?
No, I'll say just a reminder that check, usually the logo has a number in the bottom. We've seen a lot of packaging that lacks that. That just means it's not appropriately labeled. Look for that number, and anytime you want to learn more about that packaging, encode that number into the website on FSC. You can find out more about that, like how the packaging is made, like everything Robin just mentioned there.
Thank you. Now, this is a life sciences podcast, and as you mentioned, a lot of our listeners will be very much in the pharma and biotech industries. So, the life sciences is one of the industries that you support and work with. Can you tell us then about any specific rules and regulations that you need to consider when you're working with companies in pharma and biotech? That perhaps you wouldn't have in other pro in other industries, and how this affects how you tackle these projects.
This is a very sort of a challenging project anytime we come into pharmaceutical biotech, because earlier Leo mentioned paper does not like moisture, and there are a lot of moisture in the biotech industry. So that has been the challenge, and that's also another reason there are so many plastic materials being used in the industry. And that's really where I think we found our value to continue to challenge ourselves, to continue looking for materials, utilizing our design to overcome these different type of moisture challenges that we are getting from the biotech industry. That's one item. Another item is fiber. Paper are made of pulp, and thus it has paper fiber. In many industries in biotech, they are very stringent on what type of a particle that gets into the lab environment. So we are constantly thinking about how to create different type of coating where the paper fiber doesn't get generated that gets used in the lab space. It's a very challenging things to do, which is why not many people are doing it today. But as a paper factory and expert, we want to continue to find ways to combat that challenge. So that also goes back to earlier, we were talking about different type of coating. How do we come up with a coating that's compostable, that we can continue to innovate and reduce plastic waste? We are not seeking to replace plastic completely. We are seeking to a coexistence with plastic in the biotech and pharmaceutical industry, and continue to reduce the usage of a plastic with molded fiber and paper products. So I would say the two major items that we see come across is the fiber and also moisture using paper in there.
Leo, do you have anything at all to add to that?
Well, just it's very challenging, but also we've done a few successful projects already, and it just tells me that the limitation is not there. If you're willing to ask, I think there are solutions.
Can you give us some more details then on those case studies that you mentioned? It'd be great to hear about some of the, successful examples that you've had
Robin
in the
can probably
industry.
mention again on these. Yeah, Robin, go ahead. We have a really cool one right now.
Yeah, we have a couple. I think one of them is what everyone knows is the 96, 48, and 24 well storage racks that's being used. The ones that had the data matrix barcode underneath it. These product currently is all made out of plastic in both the tubes and the storage racks. What we have accomplished so far is to establish utilizing paper boxes, multiple different type of paper product to recreate the storage rack. So this thing, this item took us over about 18 months to develop, and it was a very challenging product. It is now in distribution in the biotech industry, many people are amazed how that is even possible of replacing a plastic with that paper product. So picture to the listeners to this podcast, if you are in the lab, if you are using this this well tubes, picture if their box, the holder is made out of paper, kind of like the freezer coil box that you are using. This is one thing I said it's the most recent innovation and product we have created to help and battle the plastic waste in the lab space.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I can say I've seen in the lab, but yeah, so definitely a cool innovation. Thank you for sharing that. I know it's not all, we've spoke a lot about production. That's not the only it's not the only aspect to development. It's, you know, you've also mentioned shipping. So I guess what other considerations are taking that you take throughout the whole pipeline from sourcing and shipping when you're creating these eco-friendly products.
Yes, definitely. You know, we usually explain that packaging unlike products has many stakeholders. So in the different process of their life, their ownership change. So imagine that, you know, the packaging shipped to a product, CM, and then if the packaging is too hard to assemble or kit, they failed. Basically, we've gotten this before. If it's too hard, I don't want to take care of this. You guys have to change things. Or you have a lot of errors, right? So you fail there already. And if it's in sitting the storage and then the temperature and the material isn't, you know, considered, then it failed again. So the storage area is another stakeholder. Once you get to retail, if the packaging is not revealed, you know, or printed properly, it failed at your retail space. At home, if user can open it properly or if they can't cut their hands, fail there. So there's a lot of stakeholders along this way, and each of, I think if these of these things need to be considered, and then that on top of that, there's different sustainability sort of issues along this way. So in production, you obviously want to use the offcuts or make sure it's efficient to be produced. Again, in kitting sites, there's different sustainability sort of thinking around these as well. All the way through shipping, right? Obviously, the bigger, the bulkier, the heavier items will incur more, you know, carbon. So it's truly a balancing act. A lot of times I explain to Robin, we're like, you know, playing with this, you know, switching the balls in the air and trying to figure out what is the proper way to find a balance between these. That is pretty tricky, I'll say. And then I know most of the packaging supply and design persons will agree to me that this is definitely an interesting challenge. But yes, finding the balance is quite important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess as we're nearing the end of this episode, I think if we take a look forward, just wanted to ask you both, what more do you think can be done in the field of sustainable packaging? And then also if there's any particular upcoming trends or technologies in improving sustainability that you're particularly excited about. So Leo, what about you?
Yeah. While there's no magic material yet, I do see a lot of good research and even advancement there where a bio-based material as a whole, I think, is progressing. And we've reviewed and saw a few really good ones that's really promising. That's sitting really between, you know, it's really generally not paper-based. It's feels more like plastic, but they can truly be decomposed or compostable. That's something I'm really excited in. I'm hoping more capital and money gets flowing into there because I know they need that. You know, it's very tricky to start out that kind of company. The two other things I'm seeing is really education. That this podcast obviously is part of that. Is the more people understand and know and, you know, can be involved in, the better. We'll see more progress in that. Third thing on my side is policy. While everything moving on our own, there's just things, and especially on the business side, that a policy will quickly turn things around rather than waiting for sort of business model to shift. I'm really hoping to see these three things get moving a little faster.
Thank you.
Robin,
and how about you?
Yeah, I think the technology that we mentioned, we continue to see new things happening. But I also see the common shortcomings of these technology is funding and utilization, and how company, once they see how expensive they are, they back out of wanting to use that technology. So it's a it's a symbiotic relationship on how can we continue to utilize these sustainable solution, but at the same time, the affordability comes into place. And that's really where the policy and the government can potentially support in that regards. This is another reason we continue to utilizing the third-party company that we use, plasticfree.com and Positive Luxury. These two company, they work with governments, whether it's in Europe or Asia or in North America or even South America, to combat these issues. We are in the midst of it. When this material gets pushed out to the market, Leo's team designed it, and we turn that into the actual execution. So that's the part where I think we love what we are doing here, and then we will love to continue to find these technologies and then push it out and educate to the public that these are available and we can now use them very much in our world.
Thank you. No, it definitely seems like there's a lot to be excited about. And as you say, as we continue to educate and keep the discussion going, then hopefully we will continue to keep seeing this progress. But yeah, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. I guess before we wrap things up, just very quickly, if you would have one key takeaway for our listeners, what would that be?
A lot of people think sustainability is expensive and reserved for the one who have means. Definitely not the case. We've seen many cases where if you're willing to see through, it can actually save money and oftentimes become a unique selling point for brands. So I like to point that out. A lot of people come in the mindset that, oh, it has to be more expensive. It's really not that. And I think with that mindset, that it can be both beneficial on both economic and marketing and the world side, then it's no brainer that we should push this forward. So, yeah.
Absolutely. How about you?
For me, I would say one big part is education. I challenge the listener today, the next time you receive a packaging, take a look at it and see how you will know how to recycle it or how to compost it. This is the one takeaway I challenge all the listeners to see how you do, how you will do that. And then if you are willing to do that, this will spread. So that's my one takeaway that I hope the listener can challenge themselves to do that.
There you go. I like that. The one takeaway is a challenge. brilliant. Thank you both so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time and telling us about your approach to creative packaging designing and balancing sustainability, and then specifically with the life sciences industry, how you've worked there. If any of our listeners have questions or comments on anything that you've heard today from Robin and Leo, then you can reach out to us at community@sptlabtech.com. You can find both of them on LinkedIn as well, so connect with them and send them your questions and thoughts. We've got lots more content on the way, so make sure that you're subscribed to catch new episodes as they're released and you don't miss anything. So lastly, thank you once again, Robin, Leo, for joining me today. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.